while we're also assessing what is it that is still remaining for us to ensure that we make an impact in this area. Okay, I think at this point in time, I'm going to open for the members to actually engage. Yes, Honorable Marais was still speaking. Maybe let's start with yourself. I'll take also all other hands.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe if I can just proceed from where I left off, and that was about the mainstreaming, and that assistive devices also in mainstream schools. Because I think it's very important that one must remember that you've got two categories of learners that you're talking about in schools. And those that are severely disabled, in other words, who are in the school for the deaf or school for the blind. And then you've got your learners who are partially impaired or disabled, who are in the mainstreams that we find more and more these days. So those things are very, very important. The other thing that is often very, very important to me, and I've experienced that in many years that I've been a chairperson of a governing body of a school for the deaf. And that is, if you look at the profile of your learners today in those special schools, I mean, I've been chairperson of Dalabat School for the Deaf, who was in the apartheid days was the white school. Nowadays, Dalabat is not white anymore. It is predominantly learners from a disadvantaged background who are in those schools. And if you look at the funding model of schools like that, first of all, in terms of your normal subsets to the school, just to run the schools. Secondly, in terms of hostels, I know that the department doesn't give subsidies for hostels. Now, it means that those schools or the institutes must go and find donors to fund the hostels for those learners. And if you don't provide that, how on earth will you be able to get those learners into those schools? So those are things are very important. Just one thing that I must mention, and it came very clear from the Deputy Minister, who was talking my language, and you can see that, you know, where she's coming from and the fact that she's experienced all these things. And I don't want to sound, it mustn't be derogative or negative, but if you approach issues of the disabled from an able-bodied perspective, you've lost the plot. You cannot approach it from an able-bodied perspective. And I don't want to say that the two people here don't have the empathy, but they must have the experience and the full understanding of what the plight of the disabled is. If you don't experience that, and not only by saying, yes, I understand, yes, I've got empathy, because that is kind of, and what we experience these days is either a shame or a social responsibility. That must not be in sight. They must be seen on merit and in terms of their rights, and not privileges. That's a very important thing, and I think we are very, very far down the line in terms of education. And I think, as the Deputy Minister has actually rightfully said, in many cases, we've been moved backwards, which is a major problem. Then in terms of DPSA, I'm actually shocked to see the 0.38%. And I ask myself, in the past, we've talked about this, there were submissions. I remember in the days when I was on the committee, 2006-07, for people with disabilities. And I said to myself, what has actually happened? You know, it seems like that was not seriously taken up by the government, by the departments. And again, it seems like because there are no consequences, nobody worries about that. To now be at 0.38% is an insult to people with disabilities. It really is an insult. And it seems like it's just because of talk shop. And because there are no consequences for departments not meeting those requirements, nothing happens. And Mr. DG, in your department, really, I know we've talked about this, and I say again, say it with all due respect. If you haven't got people there sitting with you who has got the real experience of disabilities, you're not wearing spectacles. That's not a disability. It's a partial impairment. If you don't have that empathy and understanding, then you're not doing your job, really. Because you can't look people with disabilities in the eyes and say that I do what is needed for you. If you look at the spread of people here, and I've said it, I remember when I visited once the Reserve Bank, and they said, yes, they've got people with disabilities in their employment. I said, what do they do? No, they work at the mint, but at the printers. So in other words, they're deaf, they can't hear, so that's good enough for them. If you look at the 4,839 on levels 1 to 9, from this, it seems like the department doesn't acknowledge the expertise and the capability of people with disabilities in middle and senior management level. Now, there are so many easy ways to go and rectify this. First of all, there must be consequences. Secondly, if you go in all the schools that matriculants are finishing grade 12, all of them are candidates to work in government departments. If you go at universities, you go at colleges, all of them are candidates to. Why are they not employed? Why are there not bursaries that they are compelled to go and work for the department? So far, and I mean it with the greatest respect in the world, it's been excuses, 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 and excuses, but no performance whatsoever, and because there are no consequences, nobody is doing anything about it. And until we don't get to a situation where there are consequences, that the DGs and the ministers will feel it and experience the consequences, I project that nothing will happen. So, Minister, Chairperson, and that applies for provinces as well. Just a last point from my side. I would very much like to get a copy of this policy on reasonable accommodation. I'm always very concerned when I read the word reasonable accommodation. Reasonable in terms of whose definition? How does that compare with the Bill of Rights? How does that compare with the rights within the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities? Is it reasonable in terms of that, or is it reasonable in terms of able-bodied people who have set and draw up this policy? And this is a policy that seems like quite old. Now, so far, we haven't seen a copy of that, and I would very much like to see a copy of that to see if it's really reasonable or if it's really unreasonable. Chairperson, I think that is for the moment is fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Murray. We've got the following on the list after Honourable Murray, Honourable Detroit, and Honourable Lovemore. Honourable Detroit.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the presentations was enlightening, and also I was impressed that the Minister touched on a lot of principles, and she lifted out quite a number of things. So I won't repeat it, and I won't go into detail. I think in the end, we as a committee have to make some recommendations. But first, before we can do that, I think we must start the questions, and we must talk about this. And that's what how I see my role now. I'm not here to make final recommendations. I want to point out a few things. And one is that it always comes down to money on the budget, for instance. Do we agree about it? I mean, we are in a situation where we don't have oil reserves. We can give a free education to everybody in free hospitals. We look at another way forward. But the budget is decided by a majority of able people over the needs of disabled people. So this is what's happening. I mean, It's like in the old times, you know, when you had a minister for a certain group of people that couldn't vote. So we're in the same situation now where we have to make decisions for people who are not allowed to speak for themselves. So what do I say? I say that we must, the disabled people and the departments that's dealing with it, they must come up with what they need and we must give it to them. So if you look at the percentage of the disabled people in South Africa, a small percentage, if you would add to that allocation, it is in fact not a big allocation or increase in the total budget. So we must look at that. That's one thing. The other thing I want to mention is that these presentations, it was not clear to me where these schools were situated. If we could have a map with little dots where these schools are, we could see, we could have an idea of where these schools are. I mean, we know that it's always a problem of parent logistics. Okay. But first of all, maybe I should say that we are dealing here with two issues. The one chairperson is about people who has already left school and is now working. That's carrying on with their life, looking after themselves. That is one problem. Okay? But I think that that problem has been addressed, and I think that the departments know what they must do about it. There's nothing we can do about it now. We've got to employ people, we've got to give them opportunities. We know that. I want to address the other problem. I want to address the problem of children that now recognized as being disabled, not as, as my colleague said, slightly impaired. We're talking about disabled people and in various degrees. And they must now, for the first 20 years of their life, they must make something of it and must get opportunities to be able to fit into society easier and productively. Now, we know that for parents it's a problem, because how does a child get to school, and do the parents have to relocate, and does the state assist in this matter? I mean, if you have a job, but your child must move to a place where there's a school, are you going to be able to give up your job in current South Africa and find employment in Worcester or in any other place where there's a school? That's a big problem. That is really something that we should look at, because I mean, if you can't travel and take the child to school, that child is out of it, you know. Then the other I want to mention is the teachers. Why can't we have incentives for teachers that teach and study in this direction of being able to deal with children that are, disabled? I actually personally think that these teachers should be paid more as an incentive. Why not? I mean, they've got other skills. It's more difficult. You still got to know what is maths about and language about, but there's an additional, there are courses and there are additional skills required for these teachers, and it's not easy. I think even if you can have disabled people, in one sense, maybe a person in a wheelchair as a teacher that would be able to teach children that's deaf or blind, wouldn't that solve two problems in one? Wouldn't it? I mean, then you have the person that got an incentive, he's got the opportunities, and he can help. And that is things we must start thinking about this. The other thing is, I'm not quite sure from these figures. I know that's been given as 22 schools for the blind and 44 for the deaf. I'm not sure quite how many children we're talking about here. But the distribution, as I said, it remains a question. And how do we solve this problem? Now, I want to touch on another thing that I've touched on before, but I think I should maybe repeat it today. And that is that until now we don't have a bionic eye. So people with the disability of blindness severe impairment, how do you say, can you say the person is living in darkness, or do we say that he's living in a world of sound? You see, that's a positive spin on it. And if you look at a person that's deaf, do you say that this person lives in silence, or does he live in a shower of images, if you look at it positively? So we've got to look at how we can, unfortunately we don't have a bionic eye, but we have a bionic ear, the cochlear implant. Now any person that's, and we've spent a lot of time, this is the point I want to make, we spent a lot of time today on sign language, but there's a large percentage of children that is learning sign languages but can actually benefit by the bionic ear, by cochlear implant. So if we can bring that percentage down from people who must live with sign language for the rest of their lives, if we can bring that down and the state as a body that should help people, if we can spend so much money on social grants, why can't we put every child or every adult that wants a bionic ear can give it to him? Why not? Why can't the state pay for this? Percentage-wise. If you look at how many children today, I think it's 10 million chairperson that's getting a disability grant under 18, and there's about, yeah, there's about 10 million, and there's about 20 million young people under the age of 20 or 18, so we talk about 50%. But if you look at disability, we look at a very small percentage of people, for instance, that would benefit by the bionic ear, and we can make a lot of amends there. So we must look at that. A single implant, I mean, for a young child, the bilateral cochlear is better, but for 1 year, it's 250,000 rand, of which the prosthesis is the outside, the part is the most expensive. But there's also can be a lot of savings. I'm sure of that, because we know that prosthesis are being imported in South Africa for various problems. I mean, I've got one in my knee, I've got titanium in one knee. It's actually too expensive, and there can be a cost saving. So we must look at that. So how to solve these problems, it will come down to a political will, a sense of justice, and money. And that is what we must do. So I leave this with the department, and I just want to mention, maybe I should mention one other thing is, this, we're talking about children at school, but there's a center called the Toy Center, it's for children who's deaf, or profoundly deaf, that's working through a curriculum from 2 years old, preschool, and then school, and some of them, as soon as they are able, they learn to speak. Now these are children with hearing aids and cochlear implants, and as soon as they can learn to speak and attain a certain grade, they go to mainstream. Some in grade 1, some in grade 3, and so forth. Unfortunately, the school doesn't take it all the way, but we must look at, I don't know how many of these centers are in South Africa, but what does a parent do if he's in Beaufort West, or Malmesbury, or just around the corner, but the child can't get there. There's no hostels. There's no. I know there's a subsidy for transport, and it's a beautiful multicultural center where the two children are being taught. But we need more of this. And I'm just talking about one now. But the principle I want to say this must be applied to other disabilities as well. That's what I'm saying. I'm just trying to say that if you can. We've got disabled athletes with prosthesis and so forth. So this is a bionic technology that can make you able. All right, that's the principle. we must use it. Okay? Unfortunately, we don't have a bionic eye. But all the other bionic technologies we must use, and we must push it to the furthest. And then, I'm just repeating this, it's a question of money, it's a question of political will, and it's a sense of justice. So if you could comment on that and answer my questions hanging in the air, I'll be appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Du Toit. Honorable Lovemore.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson. Chair, like my colleagues, I also appreciated very much the input of the Deputy Minister and was very pleasantly surprised, I must say, at her, a very honest appraisal, let's put it that way, very honest appraisal of the situation. Chair, the situation is dire. It really is. I attended a conference last year, and a gentleman named Johan Rus, who is blind, presented at this conference. His daughter is also blind. He has given up his job in order to braille materials for her. And he said because he's done it because we cannot expect, in his words, we cannot expect the department to do it. I then asked, why can you not expect the department to do it? His answer was very simple. He said, you cannot get blood out of a stone. Now, that is an indictment, if ever there was one. I'm glad to hear that there are some initiatives. I am very interested in whether there are enough. Let me then go to the questions that I have. Are we identifying, is the Department of Basic Education identifying the numbers of disabilities, specifically difficult to identify impairments or partial disabilities, but disabilities, deafness, blindness, etc., at birth, or at the earliest stage possible, at the level of diagnosis, say at clinics or whatever it might be, so that they can plan for future needs, so that there are enough schools in the future? That's one question. Then linked to that, do we have enough schools? We focused today specifically on the deaf and the blind, and I know that there are many, many other disabilities, but let's focus on that. Are there enough schools? We've been told the number of schools, but we have not been told, in fact, whether that is enough. Are there enough schools to cater for all the children that we know are deaf or are blind? I want to link to my colleague, Honorable Marais, allusion to the public ordinary schools, to inclusive education when it comes to mainstream schools. How are you identifying DBE now, identifying children in need of, for instance, large print at the ordinary schools, not the special schools now? How are you identifying them? I'm a bit disappointed that those seem to have been left to last, because I would expect, and I'd be interested to know if you have any stats, I would expect that the numbers of children with visual impairment, some level of visual impairment, are probably much higher than the numbers of children who are actually blind. But if you do have stats, that would be very interesting. Linked to that, it was mentioned that an audit has been conducted of the schools for the blind. I think it was the schools for the blind specifically. An audit had been conducted in 2010. Now, has any audit been, yes, 2009-2010, has any audit been conducted of inclusive schools? Schools that are supposed, when I say inclusive schools, I'm saying in inverted commas at this stage, because most schools that are called inclusive are not actually inclusive, but schools that are supposed to be inclusive. And if so, where are the results? Are the results available to all of us? Chair, I know that there are a lot of questions, but Let me ask just two short questions. How does one become a teacher for the blind or for the deaf? In the presentation, and I know that the Deputy Minister didn't go through it in detail, but there are a lot of very interesting numbers in her presentation. And she talks about teachers that are teaching deaf children or are teaching blind children. They are teaching Braille, but they are not qualified. Where do the qualifications come from? How do you actually become qualified? And then my last question relates to something that was very disturbing, and that was that that many blind and deaf children are not completing the full school curriculum. So they are not reaching matric. I don't know the numbers. I don't think that they were mentioned. Now, that links then to the workplace. Is there any link between the low level of employment, and particularly when I say low level of employment, I'm talking about the number of deaf or blind people employed in the public service particularly, and also the fact that they are employed at a low level, in the junior levels. Is there any link between that and the fact that they actually aren't educated properly to allow them to be employed at any kind of senior level or meaningfully employed? I hope not, but I need to ask that question. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Lavmo. I have next on my list, Honourable Maluleka.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, let us appreciate the presentations by all the department and the Deputy Minister. Chairperson, my worry is that when we go for State of the Nation address, are we following the theme? Like when we remember last year, the theme was the year of actions. Did you have those actions? Is the President talking to us or is just talking to his mind to declare the year of action or the socio-economic or on us? Because if you can check, we can't every time, every year talk about one thing. When we talk about people with disabilities and 2% and everything. I think the department, the Department of Public Service and Administration, maybe when they wrote to the department, those who are under 1%, they must not write 1%. They must tell them you are 500, you have 2 people of disability. Maybe they will be ashamed. Because maybe when they write with percentage, they don't see that something that is worrisome, Chair. On issues of the other thing that worries me is that even those departments that has 2%, is that 2% for the number or those people are working in a good environment? Because we may have the numbers, but we will find the person is not happy. For example, the issue of maybe, like I've given an example on the issue of a person who's working in Moritele local municipality. The toilet is a store. When you have to go to the toilet, you must put out the box before you can enter the toilet. Is there for the numbers, or is there, we are looking also with the environment. I'm happy that the department is coming with the police in terms of the issue of infrastructure. But what we need to do to say is that always we become happy when we present on papers. But implementation is a problem. We don't know why it's a problem in terms of implementation. Remember last time when we go to the GPAA offices, what happened with our member? They have to call some men to come in and drag her on the stairs, which is, it's not, you feel somehow when you have to carry a person on the stairs with a wheelchair. So I think, Chairperson, this thing must come to an end. We just preach, we don't end up implementing. Then I fully agree with first time with Mr. Marais on the issue of why should we have a middleman in the department to pay for the issue of the printing? Because the middleman will take time. Taking money from the department to the middleman, it takes time. Your procurement issues, you take 3 months to take money to the department. The department take another 6 months to the company. So it will take long. It's part of the challenges that we have, that we will wait 18 months waiting for the books, plus the processes of payment. That will, I agree fully with Mr. Mara that we must remove the money from the department in Western Cape and take it straight to the company after they have do their work. I think on page 15, DPSA said they will strictly monitor the job access framework, quarterly reports, strictly. And it must be strictly. DG, it must be, as you said, strictly monitoring. Maybe it will assist us. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Maluleke. If there are no other members on this matter, we will proceed, but I can see there is a hand from Honorable Mohali's hand, Honorable Nyakembe's hand, and Honorable Mohali.
Thank you, Chair. You see, it all begins in your consciousness. You might be working in this department, but when you see a disabled person, what does your conscience say? Ah, sorry. Oh, okay. It's an afterthought. You say, oh, by the way, we've forgotten about, just put in the word disabled at the end. Like you have the Department of Women, Children, and Persons with Disabilities. It just came thereafter. You've got this, you've got women, you've got children. Now you think, oh, there are persons with disabilities. It's a department. They'll just see what to do with them in that department. Because you'll never be number one as a disabled person. You'll come thereafter. After everybody has done this and this, then he thinks about you are there. The something that I want to put to this house is, you'll have organized labor talking about everything, but I've never heard them talking about, especially the teacher, the educators, talking about educating a disabled person. You'll go there January to a school and they see you in a wheelchair. They say, no, but you don't belong here. You belong to a special school. Whether inclusive education there is there or not, it's just a paper. It's a paper. Whether it's there or not, you are pushed to a special school and you stay there. I'm a product of a special school. I went to Helen France, hundreds of kilometers away from home. Then I went to Philadelphia in Soshanguve, hundreds of kilometers again away from home. No one will visit you. You are staying there, you have a problems in that school. No one will attend to you. Your parents will not even know that you've got problems. You stay there. Then comes the Department of Basic Education. It's a teacher. We just put in the teachers, the numbers. They've got this enrollment. We give them these teachers. We don't care. It's a geography teacher, it's a science teacher, it's a CPD teacher. You just put in the numbers in that school. Yeah, they've got the teachers, they've got this enrollment. Then you're out of the school. Whether the teacher will be able to sign, whether the teacher will be able to teach a blind child or a physically disabled, because we are, even though those who are physically disabled are different, you have to handle them in a certain way, differently as they are. And then the other one will be sitting there and say, I don't care as long as I get my salary at month end. Why should I care? Because you ask yourself, you are a teacher here. You don't know how to sign. it doesn't even come to you to say, I should learn how to sign. As a person, as an individual, you are teaching here, you don't know how to sign. To you, it's nothing. You get your salary month and you don't care. Whether that child progresses or doesn't progress, it's not your child, it's not your relative, you don't care. That's the kind of society that we live in. The other thing is, we always talk about departments working in silos. There's a plan here from the Department of Basic Education for 2010, train teachers, train teachers, train teachers. And we don't hear anywhere where they talk about Palama or being in partnership with Palama. And we know that Palama is the training institution in government. There's no way. And even with the presentation from Palama, I haven't met where they say, we've partnered with Department of Basic Education on this and this modules to teach teachers what to do, this and this and this. That is why we say department work in silos. Here is a plan. This plan might not even get anywhere. Count the numbers here, it's about 700 teachers. Are they enough to teach at this special schools? Does this number really, is it enough to teach at those schools? If you've trained 700 plus teachers, because it might not even be enough. And surprisingly, to all these departments, the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities is only 4 years. They've been able to employ 5.5%. It's only 4 years. We've been having DPSA for how many years? Since 1994. We've been having education, even though you cannot count the other one, but they have been here. And they are not able to employ, I mean, only 2%. But someone is 4 years old, get into them, because, okay, Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities, they are the ones who are supposed to employ those people. We are not going to do that. Ibile, alenali interest. The other issue is on DPSA, the Job Access Framework Implementation Guidelines. You see, you are disappointing. You've got all these policies, you draw these policies. I expected DPSA to be at 10% by now. Because departments give you report. I don't know, you'll be leading by example to say, if I've got this policy, we implement it like this. They give you the report that, no, we are not able to reach the 2%. You say, no, but as DPSA, you see, we've done this and this, and we've got our 2% or our 5%. But you are there. They give you reports. Lilena, also, you write out reports, give them out, and it's a report. Who will say what? Like Honorable Maduleke has said, I remember the President during the State of the Nation address last year saying, in this financial year, we're going to reach the 2% target of people with disability. Are we supposed not to carry stones and hit the President? Because the implementers did not implement what the President told them to do. I mean, those departments, they did not implement DPSA, basic education, you are here. You did not. You don't even listen to the President when the President is talking. He said this. He was not going to implement that. We are supposed to implement that. Thank you, Chair.
And lastly, Honorable Nyagembe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Every year before the State of the Nation Address, there's a cabinet lehuta, and it includes all the teachers. That the President will come to Parliament and then present the State of the Nation that is informed by all the departments, not only the executive authorities, but also the accounting officers. They know they've shaped the state of the national trust. I think I agree with you, Honorable Mohale. Maybe this is done intentionally in order for people to say, President, you have said this year, and then you have said this last year. Now it is being reduced to the President. Why do we call certain people accounting officers? The accounting on the what the executive authority has said. That's one. Secondly, Chair, in the presentation of People Disabled South Africa last week, in each and every page at the bottom, nothing with us, without us. Throughout the presentation, And that's an indication to say that this is not a particular sector that expects favors. They're part of the society. That's what it means. Now, it is going to be difficult. Now, you put a plan in place. It's not the Buffalo Committee that said the public sector must reach 2% of people with disability in the employment. No, it's the plan of government. Now, the same departments, they cannot achieve their own plan. Now, why do they exist? You can't have a plan. The plan is yours. That's what the employment equity says. The employment equity says, you make your own plan. How are you going to transform your organization? You make a plan, you look at the environment before, you develop a plan. Then you develop a plan. Now, you can't achieve the same plan. Why do you plan? You don't have to plan. Because you don't know how to implement the same plan that you put for yourself. I think the vice chair are also serving in the Portfolio Committee on Labor. There are fines if you don't achieve the plan that you put in place. I think the departments must be fined. It can't be a question of looking at all the departments. If each department has not achieved its own 2%, I think that department must be fined in terms of the employment equity. You can't set a target on employing people with disabilities and you can't do that. Then about to the basic education, Jefferson. I think nobody will hide by the fact that now there are two departments. I mean, higher education and training, including basic education, have been there. Never mind, it was one department at that time. In the presentation on the challenges, you are indicating that the challenge is that there are no early child development, which is a preparatory for the schooling. Now, the question obviously will be, when did you saw that? Because we all know, I mean, Mohale was saying here that she has to travel, I mean, 100 kilometers from home to find a special school. God, did the department then never knew that? Because the early child development is initiatives of communities. And then they are registered by the social development. And at the same time is building up for basic education. Can't you then see a need if then there are no communities who are having these early child development programs? Can then the Department of Basic Education take it as its own responsibility? In fact, the President said
There are schools that must be built this year, this financial year. Can you then look at that? Because that is part and parcel of education.
The last point, sir, is that
I think the Department of Public Service and Administration, in order for this target to be achieved and also to live to what people with disability organizations say, that they don't need papers. How do you make sure that you identify departments that you have to work with and develop a program together in order to achieve that? I think if you do that, if you bring your Department of Labor, you bring your Department of Basic Education, you bring also even the Department of Higher Education and Training, for that matter, as to what programs are there in order when you set your targets, that you know that these are the outcomes that are going to get at the end of the day. Thank you very much, sir.
Honourable members, thank you very much for your contribution on this important matter. And quite briefly, because we no longer have time, I think basically what comes out from members as well is that there must be accountability if targets are not met, and I think it's a fair issue that we have to raise. You know, if we look at accountability, then there will be seriousness, and therefore that will be achieved at some point. So let's look into this. There's a matter of early childhood stimulating programs that came out, which encouraged me that this good work that is taking place, and we appreciate that. Surely it shouldn't come as if we're saying nothing is being done. But the seriousness of the vacuum is too huge, and therefore there will always be all other matters that are raised. But that is appreciated. I need to just raise that. Or particularly on issues of early childhood. You know, I have adopted a disabled child. And what I also realize is that it's even difficult to just place a child, you know, because we'll be told he's a district psychologist somewhere and you'll have to put an appointment, it takes forever. We should, at least things like those should be put up much easier because, you know, it's torturing, like you're punished, you know, for having a disabled child. And it's really painful. You know, it makes me cry because I just think if I get tortured that way, what about other people who are illiterate? How are they going to deal with it? And therefore, I want to agree fully with all members that sometimes it's a feel and touch matter. There are quite, you know, issues that goes with what you see and feel. And therefore, surely, if you have undergone some experiences, it's quite sad. I think we can up, you know, what we're doing, without necessarily saying that you're not doing anything. That's not what you're saying, but you're actually saying, you know, this gap is too huge, and therefore it has to be filled quite quickly, you know, because sometimes it's really torturing. Okay, now, on the issue of audit at schools, which we appreciate has been done, you know, I'm thinking about the out-of-school, you know, who are not there. You know, particularly those that will also, you know, the incoming ones. You know, we talk about want to plan for the future. We're at least knowing. I know that the Deputy Minister talked about Minister Motsoaledi's program of school health program, which possibly we need to open our eyes to that and start to identify. You know, what's planning, we need to know, you know, what other disabilities have we identified so that they start up and we don't reinvent this back wheel of, you know, of marginalizing the disabled. But we do much better with knowledge and so on. Not also leaving out the issue that comrades, I mean, honorable members are talking about, honorable Nyakemba and all other members, in terms of also the issue of preventative programs. Once we embark on that program, school health program, we'd like to interrogate that. It sounds very interesting. We can advocate for that at schools. We need to go there as public representatives. And we actually have to anchor. We weren't aware, thanks for this meeting, that a number of other things are coming out. That program as well is a good initiative from government to actually say we care, we want to do better, even though we have to really do more because we are lagging behind. The issue of you know, we made an oversight as the committee went to Busele, and we heard that the Braille book takes 18 months as it stands, and it's a big problem. And therefore, the issue of companies that are involved, the role that government has played, we think they are not interacting quite well. And the issue of, you know, what do we call monopoly on dealing with this, is so wrong. You know, the sole appropriator and so on. I think government can do better. It can't leave the situation like that, you know. It doesn't have to take the portfolio committee to wipe the government. Those are the things that government can deal with. You know, because today we have already realized that there's a problem there. And it can't be left like that. The other matter is, okay, that's basically that the issue that the Deputy Minister was talking about, the catch-up programs and so on. Possibly it might be complicated to deal with a lot of other things, but because now we're aware of our gaps, we have to deal with them, you know, especially in the light that we're unable to achieve what we've set ourselves to achieve. No one else has as government. The special education as a requirement, the minister talked about very critical things like, you know, the media of instruction, you know, the sign languages, you know, a person who uses sign language, that's his or her first language, you know, it's not recognized. We are still wanting on a number of other areas, and we therefore have to sort of fold our sleeves and deal with those matters. Unless it will be seen as not caring if we proceed this way. The school governing bodies, for instance, where parents can be part of it, we need to up that as well. Most matters, members have captured them even beyond, you know, and we don't have to really repeat. The collaboration is completely inadequate on departments. You know, we don't want to sing about it. There is lack of collaboration. If you have a department like women, children, and persons with disabilities, with a minister, a deputy minister so vibrant, I think government can do better. You know, you can just put her in the center and listen to her, and you can close upon various loopholes. And then, therefore, we want to urge the collaboration. We think you can definitely do much better. You know, because she's aware as well of what are the weaknesses, even in your own presentation as government as well. So utilizing some of what you have might actually assist. Okay, I've talked about the school health program, which we would need to interrogate again as the committee, and we need to zoom into that. Very interesting, and I think we can do quite a lot. You know, I wouldn't like to really prolong all the issues. Most matters came up and they are captured. But what we need to do, let's find out if we can allow some few responses. We know most things are just comments in terms of the areas where there are weaknesses and what we want to see happening much better. But at this point in time, can I allow that if the key things that you think you can be able to talk to, you can do that department?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Chair, as you correctly indicated, I won't attempt to respond to all the questions and comments made because I've recorded an average of about six per member, so I won't respond to all of them. Let me first say that We have put forward these challenges, Chairperson, and we are aware of the risk that is involved in putting out these challenges as open and frank as we did. But it's per the directive of the Minister that we do that. We become very critical of the sector, the progress that we have made in implementing White Paper 6. And let me also at the same time say that the assessment report that I referred to, when it was presented to the Portfolio Committee for Education and to other stakeholders, all the fora appreciated the progress that the sector has made, but at the same time also acknowledged that there's a lot that needs to be done. And I'm happy that spirit prevails in this meeting as well, that we still have a lot to do. And we appreciate that very much. Just to indicate that the glitches which involve pioneer printers have now been removed.
an open tender and Pioneer Printers is going to be one of them. We will not be engaging with them through the Western Cape Education Department anymore. So that glitch has been removed. The other issue, Chairperson, is just to indicate that we will provide the information requested in terms of where these schools are geographically located, and even provide additional information such as different types of disabilities that are provided for in each of the schools. I must at the same time indicate that as part of realizing the objectives of 2013 being a year of inclusive education, the Minister has given a directive that every service that we provide, we should project priority being inclusive education, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's provision of textbooks, whether it's staffing in the form of teachers, in the form of support staff. It has to project priority being inclusive education. This message has been communicated also to MECs and HODs in provinces. I must also indicate that we do acknowledge the fact that doing this service, it's extremely important for the sector, not only in terms of making sure that these learners are brought on par with the rest of the other learners, but let me also indicate, Chairperson, that in terms of providing support to learners, we also isolate learners with special education needs. And in 2011 grade 12 results, one of the top 10 learners nationally was a learner from a school that provides for learners with special education needs. Thank you very much.
Actually, I was not stopping you, but I was trying to stop an echo. Okay, is there anything from DPSA?
Chairperson, thanks, honourable members. We've taken note of the issues that the committee has raised. I think these are issues that have been brought to our attention before, and therefore one will not be trying to deal with all of them. I think just two issues to flag, however. One is that in terms of the targets, the 2% target, as indicated in the presentation, the progress has been rather slow. But one of the issues that is coming out through the analysis is that the achievements as well are quite fragile. So if and then I'll give the example of my own department, which happens in other departments as well, is that you sit at 2% and then one person leaves, then you are back to 1.something%. I did check in my own department to say, but have the people, any of the people that we employed, have they left? And no, they haven't. It's because once we employ three more people who do not have disabilities, then again the number goes down immediately. And the useful thing at the moment is that the discussion is now going beyond that, to say it's not just about chasing numbers, because we don't want to push the public service into a malicious compliance mode where you sit at 2% and you realize if I employ one more person who does not have disabilities, my compliance levels are going to go low, so I keep this post vacant for now so that I look good in terms. We don't want to push the public service in that direction. The critical issue is a meaningful approach that is being taken now, which says open up the public service to make sure that you create opportunities for people with disabilities. And that's what the policy is trying to do. We had very useful dialogue when we presented this policy within the governance and administration cluster of forces, because you begin to get a sense of what are the issues that departments are using as obstacles for them to achieve this result. I mean, one of the things that we're raising is that DPSA is responsible for before an organogram can be approved, a particular executive authority must approach the Minister of Public Service and Administration and seek concurrence. And they say if we put posts in the organogram, which is around people who are going to serve as guides and so on, that organogram will not be approved because this is not provided for in the prescripts. But the usefulness of this approach that is being taken now in the development of this policy is that we're able to clear those things. And I think Deputy Minister has actually also indicated other ways of dealing with this matter, that it's not that you're saying create necessarily an additional post for this person. There is a post there already, but you're defining the requirements and the role in that post differently. And I just want to emphasize that this smaller issues that then people were raising to say they contribute towards delays, obstacles, barriers, and so on and so on. This policy is very useful in that it then addresses those matters. The Honourable Mare raises a question about, when you talk about the reasonable, what is it based on? And I just want to confirm that in all the documents that we have in DPSA, including this draft policy, we are guided by the convention. So our approach to what constitutes reasonable, we are guided, as it is the case with other policy documents of the department, by the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. It's still going through a process where cabinet will engage around this, and once that has happened, the policy will be made available. Just to add also, Chairperson, that these other areas that have been raised around, for example, accountability. When we presented the report in November last year to cabinet, the president said to us, "Have you told this department that they have not made the progress that they are supposed to make?" And he said, "Well, here is a report; it's been made available." He said, "Write to them directly," and that's the issue that was being raised in the presentation here. That we then have to write to each individual department and say, "As per cabinet instruction, you have not made the progress that is expected." Now, we're going to have to monitor it strictly, as the Honourable Maloleke is saying, because the President expects us to go back to him and say, having written to them, having monitored what progress is being made. I'm raising this because the issue of accountability was raised, that the process that is being followed now, the accountability stakes are being raised. So that as we deal with these processes of opening up the space, of creating the right environment through the policy that we are providing, the numbers should go through. The numbers should follow. But we shouldn't, and the Deputy Minister, I think, made the point, we shouldn't be blinded by the issue of just the numbers, because it's a bigger challenge that we are faced with. We are not going to be able to retain these people in the public service if the environment is not fitting. We are not going to be able to provide the necessary career progression if we are not dealing with these issues. And finally, we're not going to be able to have them occupy higher levels if all we are worried about is the fragile percentages of whether we're at 1.9%, 2%, and so on. The percentages must be achieved and must be exceeded. I know certainly in our own department that what the discussion we're having is that don't set your sights on 2%. Set your sights on increasing the numbers and creating the opportunities, you will see what will happen to the percentages. Because otherwise, you're going to fall into the trap of malicious compliance. And at the right time when cabinet has had these discussions on the policy on reasonable accommodation and assistive devices, we will take discussion with this committee in terms of the contents thereof.
Yeah, thanks. We did last week had a presentation from Disabled People South Africa, who are also guests at this point in time, and it will be fair to just give them a few minutes. We no longer have time to really comment, but safe to indicate that we've got a program to deal with that will be ongoing. A brief comment from yourself.
Thanks, Chairperson, members of the committee, the departments represented here. We really appreciate this engagement. I think what is important is that there is commitment to improve the lives of disabled people. Yes, the progress is slow. We note that. But we think that through engagement, continuous engagement, we'll be able to achieve that. Also, just to indicate, Honorable Chair, through you, as the DG was saying, that we might be rushing the numbers, but it's also important to validate at a particular point in time, because the President has actually pronounced himself to say that by end of March, all departments must have complied. So the likelihood which you might have is that people might give you wrong information, you know, wrong information about the status of performance in that department. So it is quite important as well that a process to also validate the information. You know, probably DPSA, the department this time, assist in terms of ensuring that the information provided is actually validated. For example, you would find perhaps in one department they provide you with information to say that they've complied. And only to find that some of the employees are just those that are using spectacles and perceived to be disabled. You know, because it's numbers, you know, we must comply, the President has actually pronounced himself. So it is quite important that definitely that on its own, you know, we're able to validate the information. We can't just sit here and say, yes, indeed, we've achieved the 2% target. Whilst, you know, since 2005, we've not been able to achieve, you know, the actual target. So what miracles our department is doing now, you know, to ensure that that happens. Issues specifically with regard to inclusive education. I think, Chair, through you, it is important that we are as well able to. I was in Limpopo over the weekend, in Limpopo province. We had a provincial general council meeting there, whereby the leadership of the province were saying that more has to be done, you know, in terms of ensuring that there's inclusive education taking place. Most of it ended up primarily during the times of pilot, you know, projects where there was a hype, you know, in the country in terms of implementation of White Paper Number 6. So we're saying that hype must actually come back. Linked to that as well, primarily within special schools, the Provincial General Council has actually indicated that perhaps there's a need to consider a review of legislation, possible amendment to legislation, because you find that acceptance of school children in special schools takes a bit of time. There are delays as well in terms of a number of issues. You find that you end up being overage, you know, you are said to be overage, and you are not allowed to complete perhaps your matric in special schools, you know, when you are 18 years and above. So that on its own is a challenge. As a result, you find many disabled youth or children being, you know, expelled, you know, from schools because of reasons not of their own making. So it is quite important that we are able to look at that. The department possibly should assist in actually looking at that. I think those are quite issues which I need to raise. The issue of sign language is quite an important one. Yes, there is a process within DPSA as well to possibly look at learnerships, mobilize learnerships, get people to come and therefore negotiate placements as well. You know, we extensively discuss that because we would want to see more and more access for disabled people that are deaf, you know, in terms of sign language interpretation. So we are actually saying that we would want to see that partnership, particularly with the Department of Education, the South African, what do they call themselves? South African Language Board, you know, PENSA, you know, because it is an issue of language, you know, and therefore the President as well is actually committed at the Siyahlola campaign to say he'll work through a process which would ensure that sign language is actually recognized as the 12th language, and that it is actually protected and promoted, you know, in the country. Thanks very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. We really appreciate last week's engagement, today's engagement. I just want to also abuse the opportunity given, let me say, that my driver is waiting outside already for me. I need to leave for the airport. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable members, department, and everyone else, because we are actually adjourning now. We adjourn with a statement that says we are still going to proceed with this program, like we said. We are going to make sure that we actually pressurize with our oversight task departments to do what they're supposed to do. And at this point in time, thanks to everyone, and thanks for the new information, the contributions, acknowledging that we've got a mammoth task.
Madam Chair, can I just find out this document that we have received? We should have added something on the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. Are we going to put that now to a next meeting? Because this is actually quite very important.
Yeah, it's a point. Yeah, I think it's good for information, but we'll definitely, moving forward, see how do we structure our programs.